Bobby Harris had his mind set. He would do it this morning, and nothing was going to stop him. He'd show them all that he belonged. Wrestling with the heavy saddle and the chill air and soft gray light of pre-dawn over the Rockies, Bobby Harris left the tack room and rocked on unsteady boots to the corral. He'd already picked out the one of his string that he would use. He'd worked with the critter just like Smoke Jensen wanted. Talked soft, made gooey sounds, always had a supply of rock candy or carrot from the winter garden. If any horses had been gentle, this one had. Bobby had caught him in a half doze in the darkness and slipped the bridle over his head before the animal knew what happened. Now, he stood tied up close to the snubbing rail. Bobby's lariat double-dallied over the post. He could free it with a flick of the wrist and then let the steamboat go. First, he had to put the saddle blanket on and secure the heavy saddle. For the thousandth time since coming to the Sugarloaf, Bobby cussed his small stature. He wished for a ladder to help heave the heavy leather contrivance onto the back of the quiet horse. Slowly, Bobby got the saddle in place. The pad was only slightly askew. He tightened the cinch straps and put one foot in the stirrup. Instantly, Favor, officially number 57A, brought up his head. Bobby's small hands could not reach the horn, so he pulled on latigo ties to swing himself aboard. Once settled in the hurricane deck, he shivered in anticipation. Bobby leaned forward and loosed the lariat. Bobby held him with his knees. Bobby's head snapped back and forth. His thin chest burned for want of air. Shoulders bowed, he hung with the rampaging horse, sawing the reins, fighting for control. His vision blurred again, this time with involuntary tears, and he reeled in the saddle like a straw dummy tossed about by satanic force. Dizzy, Bobby clung with stubborn knees. Bobby arched his back and hauled on the reins with all his slight strength.
Whoa, boy! Whoa! Whew. That's a boy. That's my good boy.
Grinning like a ninny, Bobby sat atop that stallion and guided it wherever he wanted. After a few minutes, boy and horse had bonded to the point Bobby started didos across the center of the corral.
Bobby Harris, what in the world do you think you're doing? You'll get yourself killed!
Grinning despite his pain, Bobby walked Favor over to where Sally stood.
No, ma'am. I just topped him off. A couple more goes at it and he'll be ready to sell.
Dressed in his splendid general's uniform, his division of troops displaying the ornate feather banners and other regalia of their Aztec ancestors, El Rey del Norte rode at the head of his bandit army. Early the next morning, they spilled over a low saddle between two substantial hills that blocked the view from Rancho Paseo eastward. They split into two parts and circled the village. Pueblo Viejo had been completely surrounded. Gustavo Carvajal sat at his handsome palomina with a smug smile on his face.
Let them observe our splendor and no fear.
Confident that he had halted his powerful force well out of rifle range, Carvajal firmly believed this display would have the desired effect. The bullet struck the chest of Carvajal's personal standard bearer.
Impossible!
A moment later, the slug struck Carvajal's gaudy plumed fore and aft hat and sent it spinning from his head.
You cannot do this to me! Attack, men! Attack!
Humberto Regalas commanded on the west side. His men swooped down on the town in time with the rest. He developed a sinking sensation as he watched the walls loom over him. It indeed gave the aspect of a fortress. Spears of flame came from the top of the wall, and three of his men cried out as two took bullets in their chest, and the third had his horse shot out from under.
Damn, these peasants have been taught well.
The army drew close enough to distinguish individual heads above the parapet.
Halt! And open fire!
The superior marksmanship of the bandits showed at once. Here, a rifle fell outside the wall, its owner dead with a bullet through his head. There, a man jerked upright and fell backward. Regalis quickly noted that all access to the town had been closed off. Even the windows had been bricked up.
Stop firing and move back!
The bandits rode back out of range and rounded the village to the eastern side. Regalis went to report to Carvajal.
We can't get in, and they can't get out.
Their ram will destroy that gate. Concentrate fire on this side while it is moved into place.
We charge them again?
Yes! Keep them busy!
Now in a crescent shape, the lines of horsemen thundered down on Pueblo Viejo. Spirits ran high, and they fired wildly at the walls. Then, three bandits abruptly disappeared into the ground, covered by a huge cloud of dust that came from the pit that had suddenly opened. Without warning, camouflage covers came off of rifle pits in the grassy meadow, and the village men fired point blank into the advancing enemy. Smoke Jensen watched with a grim expression while more men and horses plunged to death or were maimed in the pit so skillfully hidden. He gave the signal, and the selected men, those with good throwing arms, began to light and toss out at the enemy the tile tubes with sticks of blasting powder. Smoke took a check on the advance of the battering ram. He turned to Carbone.
They should reach the pits in the road any time now. Have everyone concentrate fire on the men around the ram.
Three bandits died. More rushed forward, dodging the exposed pit, and came at the walls with scaling ladders. At once, the men designated to the task dropped spiked logs over the side. Still, the ram advanced on the main gate. Certain of its destruction, Smoke turned to the scaling parties. Rocks were hurled down on them, and a number found the buried trench the hard way. Shaken by the ferocity of the resistance, the banditos wasted no time in retreating. They sprinted for their horses and rode out of range. Smoke Jensen took a quick count. 55 bodies littered the ground outside the walls, yet he knew Carvajal had enough men left to continue the attack. It began to look to Smoke as though his idea for a fortified village had turned into a prison for him. Gustavo Carvajal also made a count of his strength. Less than 150 now. Part of them found it hard to believe that these peasants could show such fury. Another part wondered why those of his men who had survived remained loyal and had not deserted due to the high loss. Tomas Diaz provided answer to the latter.
They're good and mad now, Excellency. Friends have been killed and maimed. They taste beyond blood and want to get to it. We should attack again at once, not give those in the village time to rest or get fresh ammunition.
Yes, it is best. And the men on the ram need protection to do their work.
A minute later, the bandit army hurtled toward the walls of Pueblo Viejo again. Smoke Jensen turned to face his friends.
We're not gonna hold.
Why not?
Most of our men are fighting their first battle. Fear is gonna catch up with them when the ram starts pounding on the gate. If Carvajal manages to get anyone over the wall, it'll turn to panic. I want you both to take selected men and fall back to the Plaza del Armas. Alert everyone there and put the men in position.
But our place is on the wall.
I know it's a matter of honor to you. I've learned this from the Indians. A man who fights and is wise enough to withdraw to a better position lives to fight again. I keep the defenders here as long as I can to join you.
It is better if I stay with you. Martin can prepare at the plaza. They are his people after all.
All right. Take the south ridge. That's where the walls are lowest. I'll stay here.
The bandit army closed and began raising ladders. They took care to avoid the trench. The ladders slanted sharply so that men had to bend forward to ascend. Smoke Jensen stepped to the parapet and looked down. Below, he saw that planks had been stripped from outbuildings and used to bridge the trench. Slowly, the ram rolled into position. Riders at the end of heavy ropes spurred their horses away from the wall. Smoke felt the impact through his boots. At once, more riders took up the ropes and hauled the ram back again. He leaned over the inside edge of the battle.
Fire the trench!
Men bent to touch torches to the oil-soaked wood in the trench. Tongues of flame licked high here and there. The clothing of the men on the ladders began to smolder. Spurred by this incentive, the bandits scurried up the ladders with alacrity.
Fall back! Off the walls!
Regalis turned to his leader, Carvajal.
They've carried the walls, Excellency!
Splendid! One more try with the ram, then get it out of the way!
Tomas Diaz sped up on a lathered horse.
50 men are inside. More go over the walls every minute.
The people of Pueblo Viejo run like frightened sheep.
Good, good. We will join our victorious soldiers at once.
The panel of the gate gave way and fell inward. The bandits surged through the opening. Behind them, flames licked hungrily at the bridging planks and wheels of the lead cart. 105 men entered Pueblo Viejo. They soon found that the frightened sheep had sharp teeth, though. Every window of the dwellings near the walls had been heavily shuttered with firing loops cut in them. Doors had been reinforced also, and from all of these, rifle and revolver barrels protruded. The ram caught fire and blocked the gate. It spurred the attackers to greater effort. Slowly, they fought their way past the defenders, isolating them and ignoring their deadly stings. The cost was counted by those who followed. Angry, the last of the outlaw army to scale the wall set fire to the house. Mercilessly, they gunned down the occupants as they rushed outside to escape the flames. 89 of Carvajal's army of hard cases survived to reach the Plaza de Armas. Bandidos came under fire from second floor windows. Quickly, Gustavo Carvajal took stock of what this meant. To his dismay, he discovered that this too was a trap.
Smoke, Jensen!
He saw the carts being wheeled into place to block all of the streets. They'd been piled high with shocks of tinder dry straw and sticks of firewood. Slowly, they began to close all avenues of escape. Grinning peasants put fire to the loaded vehicles.
This way! This way, you fools! Four of them ride down those peons!
Few of Carvajal's men listened to him. The blast cracked, hummed, and howled with a deadly rain of bullets.
Ruin! Ruin!
Smoke Jensen stood slightly back from the open doors to the largest cantina on the plaza. Carbone conferred with Pablo Alvarez, Martin Segundo.
Miguel has done well.
Men are closing off the six exits now, Don Esteban. All but a handful of Carvajal's men are in the plaza.
Good. Smoke, what do you think, amigo? Should the snipers concentrate on those outside our little trap?
If we have control in the plaza, yes. Are we sure the fires from those carts won't spread?
All of the buildings are adobe. There is a bucket brigade standing by.
Then set the carts on fire, and let's see what Carvajal does.
The bandidos are rallying!
Great, more trouble.
Smoke cut his eyes to the left, and he saw a weakness. Some better shots among the outlaws have cut down the peons who tended the carretas that should have closed off the western exit to the plaza. Already a dozen bandits streamed through the opening.
Over there! Pick them off! You men, close that gap!
At once, Smoke set off to the far side of the plaza, where the heavy rattle of gunfire advised them the bandits had gathered to offer resistance.
Come with me!
A half dozen men followed Smoke's lead. His 44 Colt leading, Smoke Jensen stepped into the clear. He came nose on against three of Carvajal's gun hawks. Over the head of the last fallen bandito, Smoke Jensen saw the gaudy uniform of Gustavo Carvajal. He raised his point of aim. When the air cleared, he saw that Carvajal had moved in the critical last second.
Damn it!
Smoke looked about the plaza, conscious of diminished fire.
We're too late to stop Carvajal from making an escape.
Go!
Spread the word to keep them under fire until they're out of range.
Quiet came at last, Pueblo Viejo. Sadly, Miguel Martin and Esteban Carbone went about counting the toll for their victory. The total seemed appalling.
Over 30 wounded, 53 dead.
How about the women and children?
None, thank God.
They'll start to clean up and restore the gate. Carvajal might be back.
Gustavo Carvajal also took inventory of the army which had made him so proud. Staggered by the terrible reckoning, he looked over the survivors with a pale face and a wan expression.
Only 57 came out of there.
Garberhall studied the faces of the survivors. With one accord, they bore the stamp of defeat and dejection. How could this have happened to them?
Oh, they can't be that good. Not Carbo, not Martin, not even Smoke Jensen. Has Quetzalcoatl turned his face from me? It must not be. No mere man can drag down the son of the sun. Smoke Jensen is not Cortez. We cannot stop here. We must pull back to the Hacienda La Fortuna and regain our strength, our numbers. Then we'll show them. Then we will ride out in the splendor of Tenochtitlan and devour the enemy. Ride on! Ride on to La Fortuna!
Will and Hans quickly put out the fires in the carretas. Men and women went about repairing the walls of Pueblo Viejo. Teams of horses dragged away the charred remains of the battering ram. A new gate was already under construction. Smoke Jensen took in all the activity, and he felt pleased. Yet it did keep nagging at him, for Gustavo Carvajal had managed to escape with at least some of his bandit army. Somehow, sitting behind these walls waiting for another attack chafed at his spirit. Carvajal would discover that his supplies and ammunition had been destroyed in the valley camp, but he would push on to somewhere. To that end, Smoke sought advice from Carbone and Martin.
Where will he go?
I would say to that grand hacienda he took over in Durango, La Fortuna. It is as much a fortress as we made of this town.
I agree. It could be taken, but...
I feel the need to get into motion, to carry the fight to Carvajal.
That's easy to understand. So long as he is alive, he will be trouble. You have done so much for us, Smoke. Perhaps it is time to leave the end to us, no?
I've gotten a lot of good men killed, women too. And I've never left a fight before its end. No, we have to lay plans. And that takes some knowledge. I'll ride out of town.
Not this time, amigo. You need rest. Let our vaqueros handle this. We know for a fact that Carvajal hasn't enough men to send any chasing after them. They can be our eyes and our ears.
Maybe you're right.
Besides, the people want us all here tonight. There's to be a big fiesta to celebrate our victory. Feasting and plenty of drink. You should rest up for that now.
I don't feel like partying, and I don't like crowds. I suppose we have to go through the motions.
That's the spirit. At least it's close. You'll like the music.
I have a tin ear.
Come on, Smoke. Try to get in the right mood.
All right, I'll give it a try.
When initial word came back that Gustavo Carvajal's ragtag remnants of his once fearsome army had marched through their old camp, found the damage, and hurried onward, grateful people of Pueblo Viejo and both ranches continued the celebration. Conditioned by centuries of mandatory religious feast days, the habit of parties and dances, masked and costume parades, and copious eating, well, they were deeply ingrained. After the first 2 days of partying, Smoke Jensen accepted it philosophically. They had been living under the strain of Carvajal's presence for nearly 6 months. Work went on at a slower pace on the defenses. People of the other villages gave unstintingly of their food and labor, and they feasted with the rest. The third day, some of these began to make departures for their own homes. Promises of help were given by the residents of Pueblo Viejo. They would finish up and journey to aid the others. The holiday atmosphere persisted. Only one incident occurred to encourage Smoke that Carvajal would eventually be dealt with. Torres, the town's mayor, came running to where the gate was being raised into place after several days of effort to make repairs. His straw sombrero flew from his head in his haste. Eyes wide, he sought out Smoke Jensen.
Señor, strangers are coming. Gringos, and they look big and mean.
What?
Smoke strolled out beyond the partly filled-in trench. He gazed out and saw the figures of several mounted men on the near slope of the saddle notch. They approached the town at a casual walk, though Smoke's keen vision picked out the constant alertness to their surroundings that their posture and head motions betrayed. It suddenly came clear to him who they must be.
Are they bad men, senor?
Oh, Oh, some might say so. I think they're looking for me.
We will not let them take you, senor. You saved our village. We will fight.
I don't think that'll be needed.
Well, hello the town. Should I say fortress?
Howdy yourself.
Smoke! Up and down! From the looks of all this damage, we figure we might be too late. We're riding in.
Come ahead.
At a brisker pace now, the seven men rode up to where Smoke stood. Grinning, Jeff York bent forward and extended a hand for Smoke to take.
Well, shit, it's good to see you, Smoke.
And you, Jeff. It's been a while.
Sorry I couldn't bring more men.
That's all right. Seven Arizona Rangers look magnificent enough to me.
I had a hell of a time convincing the captain to let us go. There's all hell to pay in the territory right now. Rustlers, turncoats selling liquor to the Apaches, gunrunners, you name it. As it is, we had to come all unofficial-like.
I reckon you would when I sent the telegram. You didn't run into anyone else, did you? Louis Longmont, Big Bull Stebbins.
You sure put out a general call. Shit must be big.
It is, or was. You can see the mess around here. This fella, Carvajal, has a regular army of bandits. Uses military tactics in attacking any who won't cow down to him.
Well, looks like you have a regular get-together.
That we did. Cut Carvajal down to size. Our best count has a strength around 60.
What size was it to begin with?
Close to 300.
That's before you took a hand, eh, Smoke?
Yep. Me and Carbone and Martine, anyway. I'm forgetting my manners. Come on in. Rest a spell. Wash your hands from the dust in your throats.
Obliged. We'll get the introductions taken care of then, and come on, boys. There's cold beer waiting.
Three gringos had been waiting for the return of Carvajal to Hacienda La Fortuna. Trent, Vickers, and Yate had not enjoyed the opulent comforts of the Hacienda. They had been locked in the small stone hovel that served as a sort of jail. Dirty, unshaven, and starved, they were dragged out and thrown roughly to the flagstone floor in front of El Rey del Norte's throne. Carvajal wore a fresh new general's uniform, this time that of the artillery branch. His thick lips curled in disdain at the sight of the wretches. He peered at him through a pair of opera glasses, held by an ornate silver handle. With a flip of a scented handkerchief to his nose, he spoke with no less disdain.
What are these?
They say they are notorious Yankee gunfighters. They've come to offer you their services, Excellency.
They are gringos.
I saw Smoke Jensen, Excellency.
Oh, so he is. Tell me, gringos, do any of you know Smoke Jensen?
I hate Smoke Jensen.
So do I.
I especially hate Smoke Jensen.
I didn't ask how you felt about him. I asked if any of you knew him.
Trent considered how to answer that one, deciding upon the truth.
Nope. Never laid eyes on him.
Nor me. We just know he's bad medicine. We come to kill him.
I've done had some of them stories about him read to me. They're all bullshit. Besides, he done killed some good friends of ours. We want him dead.
No more than I, hombres. Tell me honestly, would you take orders unquestioningly?
Who from?
From me.
Who are you?
I am the Emperor Montezuma of the Aztecs.
Right. We'd be deeply honored to take your orders, Excellency.
That's more like it. To use good manners is a mark of respect for your betters. You show some promise, young man.
Oh, thank you, Excellency. Is there anything more you wish to know?
For the time being, that is enough. Humberto here will find you a place to stay with the other of my warriors. Do you wish to belong to the Eagle Warriors or to the Jaguar Warriors?
Wherever you need us most, Excellency.
Oh, my, I do like your attitude. How are you called?
I'm Trent. This is Vickers and Yates.
Unusual. I shall call you Lazarus 1, 2, and 3.
May I inquire as to why we will all have the same name? Why Lazarus?
Why, isn't it true that it was Lazarus whom Quetzalcoatl, in his guise as El Cristo Rey, raised from the dead? And most assuredly, since you chose to show the proper humility and respect, you have certainly been raised from the dead. Take them away, Humberto, and settle them in with the men.
Jeff York paced the large commodore of the inn like a caged panther.
Now, we know that this Carvajal is in Hacienda La Fortuna. When are we going to get after him?
We'll leave tomorrow morning.
We taking this whole scratch-together army?
No. Only you seven rangers, Carbone, Martine, and I.
Son of a bit! You're kidding, aren't you?
Not a bit. Of course, we'll have along 20 of Martine's best gavaros. They can ride and shoot.
Man, that last vaquero who came in said their numbers had grown to near 120.
Mm-hmm. And we can live with those odds, I'd say.
Hacienda La Fortuna.
Martine identified the large, high-walled quadrangle that rested on a rise in the sheltered valley.
Looks tough to just waltz in and take.
Carvajal did it, with only 50 men.
A moment later, Smoke Jensen came into view beyond the low, heavy boughs of a thick-trunked pine. York gave him a wave and relaxed.
Carvajal's there, all right.
A thick stand of first and second year growth timber blanketed the gradual slope of a minor peak that marked the mouth of the valley. The trees were so dark green as to be almost blue-black. They adequately concealed the score of vaqueros who had accompanied Smoke, Carbone, Martine, and the Arizona Rangers.
Well, there's 30 of us. We have Smoke Jensen.
I've been thinking about putting all this talent to work. Your vaqueros were right. Carvajal is growing stronger every day. I think we should pay him a visit tonight.
What I can't understand is how he manages to attract men to his army.
It has to do with the nature of our people. No, don't take me wrong, Senor York. Your Spanish is excellent, better than Smoke's, although it's border dialect. I'm sure you've grown up around Mexican people. The thing is, you don't feel like a Mexican.
Jeff York cocked a sandy eyebrow.
Not long ago, I told Smoke that his skin was that of a gringo, but in his heart, he was Mexican. You think and feel like an American, my friend. You see, we are all good Christians, proud of our European heritage. But in the breast of every Mexican beats the heart of our Indian savage. The flair, the romance of wild adventuring, with a bandit warlord appeals to many of our men, especially the young ones.
Sort of like rutting young javelinas.
Just so. Smoke has convinced a number of them to abandon their high life with Carvajal and return to normal pursuits. I have a feeling he's about to try the same thing tonight.
We're going to do some convincing, my friends. Any of those who don't see the light will have to be disposed of. That's hard. Cold, I know. But we can't afford to have them at our backs when we go over the hills.
Dios, you're serious about paying Carvajal a visit?
Of course.
Sentries started disappearing shortly after darkness fell across the valley. Smoke had a definite plan in mind. Risky, though entirely necessary from how he saw the ongoing problem with Gustavo Carvajal. In truth, the Bandit King remained entirely too strong for a heads-on confrontation. Doctors had not yet come up with their ideas about men and the role their subconscious minds played in their lives. Even so, Smoke had acquired a sound understanding of what moved men who seemed to be on a fixed point. It wasn't what one could see that frightened most. It was the unseen. To put it simply, Smoke wanted to scare the living hell out of Gustavo Carvajal. To accomplish that, he decided to combine the attrition of the guards with an appearance in the dead of night. Silently, he wished for a conquistador's crested helmet, breastplate, and scarlet cloak. He would have to make do with what he had, though, and that included a personal talk with the would-be Emperor of the Aztecs. Smoke set about his preparations. He used dead coals from a small fire to blacken his face. He removed his boots in favor of a soft pair of Cheyenne moccasins. He, like all of the small force, would rely on silent weapons. In Smoke's case, that would be his bowie and a tomahawk. He had not used the deadly hand axe in some while. Its results could be quite unsettling, and Smoke counted on that now. He had taken it out of his saddlebag earlier and honed its edge to a keenness. Now, he slipped it under his cartridge belt and set off silently toward the distant walls of Hacienda La Fortuna. While he covered ground, He wondered how Jeff York and his Rangers were doing. Though not quite as deadly as the infamous Smoke Jensen, Jeff York and his Texas Rangers were plenty deadly. They silently snuck up behind guards, plunged knives into hearts and kidneys, creeping closer and closer to the Villa, taking pleasure in their deadly game. Smoke Jensen hugged a deeper shadow in the midst of the one cast by the wall. Five of the vaqueros had managed to penetrate the hacienda by simply walking through the small portal built into the main gate. They laughed and talked with the guards, then they killed them and took their place. Had the entrance been secured, Smoke would have been required to use his lariat and climb the outside wall. This way made getting in easy. Getting out now was going to be another matter. He edged along the base of the thick stone and mortar palisade toward the front of the enclosed dwelling. One of Martin's vaqueros stepped outside the portal and lit a cigarette. That was the signal Smoke waited for. He rapidly closed the distance on cat feet. Silently, he faded into the inner courtyard darkness. The moon, fatter slice now, shed light in the center of the garden-like patio. It set off silver sparkles from the water that splashed high arcs in a fountain. Smoke had no way of knowing which room Carvajal used for sleeping. The logic, directed by the man's mania, dictated that the King of the North would use the grandiose master bedroom. I mean, that made sense. Only, could he rely on Carvajal to make any sense at all? He would have to seek the Bandit King out. And that meant opening a hell of a lot of doors. Smoke's moccasins whispered on the polished flagstones of a corridor formed by the room overhang above and open archways that gave onto the courtyard. Smoke had glided past two doors.
You must be Smoke Jensen.
No tiende, Inglés.
Oh, come now, Smoke Jensen. You're caught fair and square.
Who is it that's caught me?
The name's Trent. And I hate you, Smoke Jensen. Turn around, I want you to get it face to face.
Smoke turned and in the same smooth movement, swiftly drew his tomahawk. Smoke went to his side, removed the hawk, and dragged the body to a niche recessed in the wall. He stuffed the corpse of Trent into the depression and hurried on his way. Passing the first floor rooms that opened onto the corridor, Smoke went directly to a stairway that gave access to the second level. He'd reached the halfway point when his keen hearing brought the crack of boot heels on the stones of the corridor he had just left. A man in vaquero costume swung around the bottom end of the stairwell and started upward without looking. Smoke tensed, his leg muscles drawn like coiled springs. Any second, the bandit would see the toes of his moccasins. In the last possible instant, the bullet fitted Smoke's fist. Smoke wiped his blade on the dead man's white shirt, and he started upward again. Here, the layout was in reverse of downstairs, with the corridor running along the outside wall of the hacienda. Smoke turned to his right and started off to his dangerous task of opening doors. The first knob turned easily. A guttering candle revealed a sleeping form, much too large to be El Rey del Norte. Smoke closed the door and moved on. The next door opened entirely too easily, and Smoke found himself face to face with one of Carvajal's lieutenants. Before Tomas Diaz could raise a shout, Smoke belted him with a hard right to the forehead. Cautiously, Smoke eased out of the room. At the far end of the corridor, a large door denoted the master bedroom. It drew Smoke like a longing for the high lonesome. To his surprise, he found the door unlocked. A huge canopy bed occupied a low platform in the center of the room. The 5'6" form of Gustavo Carvajal lay sprawled in the center of turned back sheets. The passing wind stirred the stringy wisps of his mustache. Smoke Jensen stood over, studying his sodden slumber. With the suddenness of lightning, a new idea came to him. Quietly, Smoke exited. He went first to the room of Tomas Diaz. Hefting the big Mexican bandit over one shoulder, he carried him back to Carvajal's room. He sat Diaz upright in a Tudor chair facing the bed. Then he went for the dead bandit on the stairs. He brought him there too and placed the corpse in another chair. He made a quick inventory of two large chests and came up with a large white sheet. This he draped over his own head and arranged it to cover his body. He located the place for eye holes and cut them with his knife. Now he was ready to awaken the King of the North.
El Rey de Norte, the Grand Emperor Montezuma, the most famous bandido jefe of them all, Gustavo Carvajal.
What? Who? Where am I?
Carvajal's bleary focus rested on the corpse of the bandit in the nearest chair.
You are in the Hall of the Dead. You have been brought here to be judged.
Why, that can't be. I feel my heartbeat. I can breathe. I can feel my skin.
You were brought here in a corporeal form to be weighed in the balance of the eternal.
Finally, Gustavo Carvajal fixed his gaze on the white wraith that seemed to float at the end of his bed. Painfully, his thoughts began to grind together. Tomas Diaz slumped in a chair at that side. He, too, could well be dead.
Dios mío! Are they dead? Are they all dead?
Yes! It is time to decide your fate!
Carvajal began to regret he had taken that second pipe of the sticky brown happiness. If only he could think clearly.
This cannot be happening!
The sickening odor of burned opium had given Smoke Jensen his sudden inspiration. Now he wondered how he would break off the charade and get away without Carvajal becoming wise to the whole game. He raised one arm slowly, a finger pointing accusingly at Carvajal.
Murderer! Thief! Assassin!
Fortunately, Carvajal solved Smoke's problem for him. Hearing the list of indictments against him, he saw it escape in oblivion. Uttering a tiny gasp, his eyes rolled up under his bushy brows, and he fainted. Smoke Jensen left the unfortunate outlaws, both living and dead, in Gustavo Carvajal's bedroom. The thought crossed his mind that he could have easily killed the mad bandit chief with a quick slash of his knife. But Carvajal was unarmed, helpless, unconscious. To Smoke Jensen, that smacked of cold-blooded murder. That's the sort of thing that Gustavo Carvajal might do. Most Easterners, Smoke knew, made light of the so-called Code of the West. But not those who lived by it. Not Smoke Jensen. Killing a man in a gunfight or at long range in a pitched battle or to escape an ambush was an ordinary occurrence on the frontier. But back shooting, backstabbing, and otherly cowardly ways of dispensing with an enemy, they were hanging offenses. Same as stranding a man without horse or gun in the middle of nowhere. Smoke had put under a number of men guilty of such crimes. He had no desire to join their ranks at the present, no matter how damn tempting the proposition appeared. Nope. Gustavo Carvajal would live to fight another day. Only now, Smoke believed he had the measure of the man. For all his swarthy complexion, the King of the North had turned a sickly, pasty green white when his befuddled mind had bought the play-acting of Smoke Jensen. Which meant that Smoke could yank his chain anytime, anywhere now. And that's the way Smoke wanted it. There would be enough killing tonight to add to Carvajal's unsteady memories of the midnight encounter. More than likely, a few desertions of men newly joined in the ranks of the King's army. That aspect brought a smile to the lips of Smoke Jensen. It had been easy. Now all he had to do was get out of the hacienda undetected. Yeah, that was all. He paused at the top of the stairwell to listen for any sounds of Roman bandits. Relieved when he heard nothing, Smoke started down the stairs.
That, senor, will be far enough.
Umberto Regalis stood at the banister, an oil lamp in one hand, a big, nasty-looking Mendoza 45 in the other. With studied casualness, he reached up with his left hand and stroked one thick wave of his black mustache. Smoke Jensen felt like a fly on a sticky tape.
It appears you have the advantage.
You will put your pistola down gently, on the step, at your feet. Do as I tell you, or I'll shoot you where you stand.
Slowly, Smoke bent at the knees.
Use your left hand so I can see what you're doing.
Smoke complied. He held the butt of the Colt 44 with forefinger and thumb as he edged lower. His right hand, out of sight of the bandit lieutenant, worked up the cuff of his trouser leg. carefully. Smoke laid a six-gun on the tread.
Excellent. Now, walk down the stairs. I'll be right behind you.
Taking the steps one at a time, Smoke Jensen concentrated on appearing casual as he moved his right hand in front of his body. He reached the bottom of the flight.
Over against that wall. Put your nose to it.
Smoke did as he was told. A moment later, he sensed a light touch as Regalis relieved him of his second revolver and buoy. Imperceptibly, Smoke tensed. Regalis stepped back.
Smoke Jensen, you're not so dangerous after all. Turn around. I want a good look at this famous Smoke Jensen.
Smoke spun out on one heel and rolled out the small .38-40 Smith. Smoke took the stairs two at a time, retrieving both of his Colts on the way. He entered the room from which he had taken Tomas Diaz and crossed to the window. A quick glance showed him it would be a dangerous jump to the ground, particularly for someone in moccasins. Smoke took quick stock of the contents of the room. True to his former life as a vaquero, Tomas Diaz had a large coil of riata hanging on one wall. Smoke recovered it and slipped the loop around the bed leg. He paid out the rope and dropped it through the window. Now, with a little luck, he might yet get away in one piece. Smoke climbed through the casement and gripped the rope tight. He swiveled around and braced his moccasins against the wall. Carefully, he began his descent. Smoke had his moccasins under him on solid ground when the powder magazine blew. In all the confusion and damage inside, no one thought to look outside. Smoke had started off at a gentle lope when mounted men came toward him out of the darkness. The one out front led Sidewinder by his rein. Grateful, Smoke swung into the saddle and caught up to Juan Muriel.
I think we just spoiled their day.
Jeff York brought the news to Smoke Jensen after speaking with some of the locals.
They're pulling out. Every last one of Carver Hall's bandits come are riding away from the hacienda as though Satan himself was after them.
That's something we didn't anticipate. Are they scattering?
No, they ride together.
What direction?
To the northwest, Smoke.
What's in that direction?
If you go far enough, there's a Cannon del Cobra.
That makes sense. Go tell Carbone and Martine. We're going after them.
This time we finish it?
I think you can count on that.
3 days of hard riding through increasingly more rugged mountains brought Smoke Jensen, Carbone, Martine, and Jeff York to the high rim of the Cannon de Cobra. Gustavo Carvajal headed unerringly to the sanctuary of the twists and turns of the Great Canyon. All the way, York and his rangers and the vaqueros had kept up a steady harassing fire that whittled at Carvajal's numbers. When the last of the bandit army disappeared down a steep trail, their pursuers reined in.
Where do you suppose he's headed?
He has something in mind, amigo. He came to this exact spot. We didn't drive him here.
You said earlier that Carvajal disappeared for some while. Could he have been building a hideaway in this canyon?
Carbone cut his eyes to Martine.
It might be possible. No one saw or heard of him for 6 months. Then he came out with this King of the North nonsense.
I think we should let him settle down a little, then go have a look.
Jeff York's eyes had widened at the vast expanse of the Copper Canyon. Huge walls of amber, russet, and jade climbed to the rim where they stood. Fully 5 miles across, the opposite monuments to nature's power repeated the spectacle. It went on for miles. Far below, a rapid river, redder even than the Colorado, twisted sinuously through the confines of the bottom.
Me and the boys will go long, Smoke. We had some experience chasing bad men in the Grand Canyon.
But that's nothing like this place, eh? Carbone warned me in advance. I assume there's another way in here, Carbone.
Oh, yes. The mouth of the canyon is 10 leagues to the west.
Maybe some men should be sent to plug that hole.
At once!
We'll go along and scout out the whole canyon.
That could take days. We have him trapped. Now is the time to close in and end this.
Could get costly. Even a cornered squirrel will fight to save its life.
Oh, you're right, as usual, amigo. This trail is so narrow that only one at a time could come up it. Half a dozen men could hold the top against an army.
Then why don't we do it that way? Leave 10 good men and the rest will start a sweep of the canyon.
Gustavo Carvajal paced the ground behind the high man-made stone wall early the next morning.
Here! They follow us here and come in at night to kill or run men off as though it was their canyon. I can't let that happen now, can I? They are only men after all.
A ghost of memories floated in Carvajal's muddled mind. Vague images of a spirit and the dead bodies of his most trusted men added to the opium-induced confusion of thoughts. He'd awakened from his comatose state to find that Humberto Regalas was indeed dead. That left him with only Tomas Diaz and Pedro Chacon to give purpose and direction to his less than rational life. Far from relishing his increase in status and power, Tomas Diaz wished fervently for the steadying influence of Humberto Regalas. He knew only too well the extremes to which his leader could go when the fantasy of being the Emperor of the Aztecs seized him. It helped little, he considered, that Pedron Chacon had been elevated to fill one of the gaps left by the death of Ignacio Quintero and Humberto Regalas. Tomas considered that he might have been wise to ride in the other direction when the army, now 35 stronger, had headed for Canon del Cobre. He suddenly realized that Carvajal expected a response.
See, Excellency, only men.
Then we will defeat them. I know exactly how.
They are all around us, Excellency. Even the trail we entered by is blocked.
We are going to compel them to let us get away unharmed. Gather up every captive in camp. Bring them down to the gate. I have a little exhibition to present to Carbon and Martin.
20 minutes later, Tomas Diaz reported to the King of the North.
It is as you wish, Excellency. The captives are at the gate.
Excellent! Now, help me into my robes.
Something's going on.
Smoke, his hat tilted down over his eyes, lay against a scrub cedar to catch a little sleep. He heard Jeff clearly, though, and he sat up.
Any sign they plan to counterattack?
No, they have a crowd of plain folks up close to the gate. A second ago, one of the hard cases opened the whole shebang. Uh-oh, what's that fella figure he can do? He's gonna try and fly out of here?
Smoke came forward and peered over the lip of the low ridge in front of the rock fortification, obviously of recent construction. It answered part of what Carvajal had been doing in the missing 6 months. The pint-sized outlaw king had come out from behind the walls, wearing his Montezuma regalia. Head swiveled left and right, and he paced back and forth on short, stocky legs. He made a pretty colorful spectacle. His feather cape and huge, ponderous headdress swayed and rippled in the breeze. At last, arms raised, he stopped and turned to face outward.
Oye! Carbon! Martin! Smoke Jensen! I have gathered up some of your friends and neighbors! They are all under the guns of my men. I have also given the order that they will be sacrificed to Huitzilopochtli, the war god of our ancestors. Their hearts will be cut out of their living bodies, unless you allow us to depart from this canyon unharmed. And further, that you will submit to my will in all things, pay tribute and provide men for the army of the King of the North. You have 1 hour to decide.
I've decided already.
So have I, Carbon.
Not so fast, amigos. I have been thinking. We have done enormous harm to Carvajal and his bandits. What would it matter if we agreed to his terms? We could always attack him under far better conditions out in the open.
Do you actually think Carvajal will let any of the three of us live? Not after what we've done.
It is obvious he has completely lost his mind. He means it about the captives. He'll put them over some rock and cut their beating hearts out of their bodies.
I suggest that you put the threatened executions out of your mind for the time being. I want you to listen to a plan I've worked out.
Immediately after Carvajal issued his ultimatum, feverish activity began right in front of the main gate. Squarish stones were manhandled into place, and a large, flat rock placed atop them. The whole structure had a barbaric menace about it. It recalled images from Mexico's dark past. Sharpshooters among York's rangers sighted in. Three bandits fell dead in the sandy red soil of the canyon. While the besiegers looked on helplessly, three bodies were handed up and dropped over the wall.
I never expected that.
Carvajal's in a fast canoe with a broken paddle. Expect anything from now on.
Such as gringos fighting alongside this bandit trash.
Carbone pointed toward two taller figures on the ramparts.
I killed one Yankee inside the hacienda. Appears he had friends.
What are we gonna do about him?
If they don't give up, kill him.
When the prescribed time had elapsed, a young woman was dragged from the crowd at the gate. Four men held her down across the stone table while a fifth approached with a long, slim-bladed knife. He took his position above her head, which hung over one end of a flat block, and he raised that knife in both hands. Smoke quickly put rifle to shoulder. Instantly, fat sticks of giant powder arced through the blue sky to land inside the fortress. At once, the entire force of volunteers, rangers, and three gunfighters attacked. Smoke Jensen led the way. Everyone had been given a specific target, and for once, Smoke noted, they went about doing their jobs in a direct, efficient manner. Smoke sought out and headed directly for the long, lanky form of Tomas Diaz, separating him, however, with three of the bandits. One of the men dropped dead with a bullet in his brain. Startled out of their daze by something so close and personal, the other two concentrated on Smoke Jensen.
By God, it's him, Yates! It's Smoke Jensen!
I hate you, Smoke Jensen!
Bullet snapped past Smoke's head, and one tore cloth in his left armpit. Coolly, he swung the muzzle of his .44 toward the offenders. Yates went to his knees, gut shot. Vickers ran his six-gun dry, and in stupid desperation, threw it at Smoke.
You're really fucking stupid.
Doubting that the attackers numbered less than a fifth of their strength, the bandits ignored their captives. Smoke never lost sight of Diaz. He stepped over the dying Vickers. At that moment, Diaz cut his eyes in Smoke's direction. In a flash, Smoke realized the other man had gleaned his intention, and he took off running. Smoke went after him. Caution took command as Smoke neared the tailgate of the cart. He paused a moment, mentally tracking the rhythm of battle, then rounded the high side of the vehicle with his .44 leap. Smoke saw Diaz pitch forward into the broken rubble on the ground. Smoke's mind began to record the fact that the battle was ending. All around, bandits stood with their hands in the air. Powder smoke wafted away on the stiffening breeze. Carefully, Smoke Jensen went among the prisoners and their former captives. He peered intently at all those of short stature. Carbone came to him on his second circuit of the captured bandits.
What are you looking for, amigo?
Carvajal. He's not among our prisoners.
That would spoil some of our fun.
I thought so. I'm going to look for him. He kind of gone far in that feather cape getup.
This cannot be happening.
His men deserting him, surrendering to a handful of enemy. It was like the time before. So few the men who came with Cortez, yet in the end, they had vanquished a mighty army and put a whole people in bondage.
No, it is all wrong, not again.
He was the magnificent Emperor Montezuma. He was El Rey del Norte. He was Gustavo Carvajal, one-time petty bandit with delusions of greatness. Suddenly, he saw reality clearly, with his army collapsing around him, and it dragged down the corners of his mouth in sadness. He also saw what the future held for him, El Peridon, the firing wall, and a squad of soldiers. But he would not go alone. He watched closely as Smoke Jensen searched among the captured bandits. Gustavo Carvajal knew full well whom the gringo sought. Well, he'd not disappoint the Yankee interloper. He had a secure place in these rocks. From there, he could watch everything that happened. It would make a good place from which to avenge himself on Smoke Jensen.
Only a little closer now. Closer.
With deliberate care, he cocked the Mendoza .45 in his right hand and began to raise it. Smoke Jensen came on, as though drawn to the jumble of boulders at the back of the small fortress. As he glided past the hiding place of Gustavo Carvajal, the Bandit King raised his revolver the last few inches. The shot brought Smoke Jensen around in a half crouch, .44 Colt at the ready. What he saw was a wet red smear on the rocks that had been behind him. Flecks of white and brown tissue spattered it. He stepped to the opening and looked into the hidden pocket. Gustavo Carvajal lay sprawled in a half-sitting position against the erosion-carved back wall. He had taken the only escape he had to avoid capture, humiliation, and eventual execution. The muzzle of his .45 Mendoza still remained inside his thick lips. A week later, Smoke Jensen rode north in company with Jeff York and his Arizona Rangers, Esteban Carbone, and Miguel Martin. Their mood was high and light. A lot of rough jokes flew among the members of the party, and Smoke found himself enjoying it. He knew the Rangers would go back to keeping the peace in Arizona territory. Now his Mexican friends, the new made Haciendados, well, they would raise their families and restore their ranches. Carbone, he'd marry again within 2 years and produce four more progeny. Martin would grow fat and gruffly affable in his declining years. All would be well with the world again. Except for Smoke Jensen, whose reputation kept catching up with him. But that's another story from the life of the mountain man. Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 12, Fury of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1993, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Joe Brack, David Korn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Ren Casey, Thomas Penny, Nanette Savard, Tim Carr, Mort Sheldon, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Azel, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, and Eric Messner. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways, adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Dwayne Beeman and Richard Rowan. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Original music composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Fury of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series, all available in graphic audio and road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Falcon, Mrs. Custer told me something that I'd never heard before. She told me that you were with her husband when he was killed.
I wasn't with him at the exact time he was killed. I was with Bentina Reno when the general was killed.
Why haven't I heard this about you before?
Because my being there was an accident of sorts. A lot of good men gave their last full measure of devotion on that day. I never felt it was right to detract from their honor by interjecting myself.
I wonder, Falcon, would you share the story with me now?
It's been over 50 years, and I've never told this story to anyone before. Not sure I can do it justice. Well, I warn you, It's a long story.
I'm a novelist, Falcon. I deal in long stories. Please, go ahead.
Well, now, the year 1876 was what historians would call an eventful year. In Philadelphia, they celebrated our country's centennial. Colorado became a state. They invented the telephone. And at a lonely place in Montana, General Custer and 265 brave men were killed.
Colonel McAllister, this way! Damn! You're one hell of an engine fighter, Falcon. I've been at this game for a long time. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
I'll be damned.
What is it?
The Colorado Home Guard is missing 100 rifles. It looks like we just found a few of them.
You mean in addition to the Gatling guns we're looking for, there's also a bunch of repeating rifles out there?
Sweet fancy Moses, look at that!
Have you ever seen that many Indians at one time?
No, sir, I have not. Two Bears was right. These engines is coming from everywhere.
We have to tell Custer about this. I don't think he has any idea what he's letting himself in for.
You don't really know the General all that well, do you?
I haven't known him very long. Why do you ask?
Because it ain't gonna make no never mind what we tell him. He has his mind made up to go after the engines, and that's exactly what he's gonna do.
We've got them this time! We've got them, boys! Trumpeter Martin!
Don't miss the saga of Falcon McAllister at the Little Bighorn and Eagles 14, Bloodshed of Eagles. Available now in Graphic Audio.
In a land where no good deed goes unpunished, Frank Morgan, the last gunfighter, is in for a lot of punishment.
Come on, let's go see about this.
Reagan.
If that was one of your parts, I'm afraid they crossed the divide, fella. One shot up real bad in front of the cabin. The other still inside.
I'm called Roof. Roof Blake.
Anybody you'd like for me to write to?
You mean to tell him I'm dead?
Just in case.
My ma and sister who live in Flagstaff. Ma's name is Alma Blake. My sister is Tess. I got wages coming from the Lazy F spread owned by Howard Flynn.
I'll see to it that your ma and sister get what's coming to you, Roof. Don't you worry.
Hold your fire, mister. We just want to find out if our parts are all right.
Come ahead. But keep your hands where I can see them.
That looks like a couple of our friends.
One's Roof Blake, the other's called Bragan. That's all I know about him. Wardell's still in the cabin.
What happened here?
I rode up and found the cabin on fire, and those men lying out here. They'd been shot as they ran outside.
He's lying, Buxton. I'll bet a hat he's the one who killed them boys.
Morgan's in for punishment and a lot of headaches.
I don't normally wear a badge.
Yeah, before, though. So it ain't like I'm asking you to do something you've never done.
I'm on my way to Phoenix. I've been mixed up in enough shooting scrapes in my life.
I can see why you feel that way. But the plain fact of the matter is, we need you here, Frank.
Punishment, headaches, and Frank Morgan ends up with a target on his back.
Shit!
Morgan! It's Frank Morgan! He's their leader! Get him!
Frank Morgan.
That's my name. What business is it of yours, mister?
Just making a note of it. I like to keep track of these things.
What things?
Oh, just the men I've killed.
Saddle up for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, number 14, The Devil's Legion, in Graphic Audio.
This blood brothering between you, Prince Midas, and you, Chieftain Brunhilde, will be the first in over a decade. You are not to harm the Shaggoth in no way, not even at the cost of your own life. Not that you could bring harm to the great beast anyway. Not even if you brought fine weapons in there with you. This is a test of your courage, not your warrior skills, and the test of your trust in each other. If either of you fails, then you both will surely die, and horribly. Are you prepared to begin?
What are you about, Elf? Are you going to tell me or not?
You take care, Bradwarden. On the South Road, I heard rumors of the Rosy Plague.
Oh, by the demons, you say?
I know not if there's any truth to those words. More likely, they were the utterances of a gossiping fool and nothing more. But I can ill afford to take the chance, any chance, of bringing the plague back to my people. Know that if the land becomes ill with plague, the Tuelalfar will secure our borders, and none will leave for many years. Farewell.
It is the plague! It is confirmed, my king! The Rosy Plague! What are we to do?
What can we do? Lock our doors fast and tight.
Oh, but where are you then? You've not been out of your walls in days! In weeks! Are you just to sit in there and let us all die then? Are you just to stand on your walls and shoot us dead if we come too close? And you're calling yourself the Folk of God? But you're just a pack of scared dogs, yar!
Join with us before all the world has fallen into darkness. Help us put the church aright and thus end the misery of the plague.
You believe the plague to be a punishment from God?
On those who have forsaken the truth.
Absurd.
Obvious. I see it, and they see it. We know the truth, and we know the source, and no edicts from Father Abbot Agrangere will sway us from that path.
You risk the wrath of Father Abbot Agrangere and all the masters of St. Mirabel.
And you, Brother Glendonhawk, risk the wrath of Marcalo de Unaro. Which of us, then, do you believe in the worst situation?
You have gone mad.
As much has been said of many prophets. If you try to stop us, you may prove victorious, but I warn you that I will come for your throat first and foremost.
Experience the latest chapter of the Demon Wars saga in graphic audio. Don't miss Mortalis Part 2. Available now.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.